Support for WOSU podcasts comes from listeners. You can give at WOSU.org. Thank you for supporting digital content from WOSU Public Media.
This podcast was recorded Wednesday, November 3rd at 12:06 p.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like Democrats may never win another election again because they lost the Virginia governor's race.
Don't you love it when we blow a race all out of proportion just because it's the only one on the schedule?
Well, we need to talk about something.
Yeah, especially when it's just across the Potomac River from the Washington Press Corps.
Let's talk Ohio politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters basking in that post-election glow or finishing off the last slice of humble pie. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, the politics of fear intrudes on trick-or-treating. Unfounded fears, but fear nonetheless.
But first, we had an election. It was not a presidential or even a congressional election for the most part. It was an odd year election, an election that occurs on an odd numbered year. Usually these elections are reserved for hyper-local races like city council, school board, local judges, things like that. But there were a couple congressional special elections on Tuesday.
Yes, one in Northeast Ohio, one in Central Ohio. Both came out as expected. In the Cleveland area district, one's represented by now Housing Secretary Marcia Fudge, Democrat Chantel Brown easily beat Republican Laverne Gore, so no surprise there.
No, very Democratic district there. Brown won this seat back in May when she defeated Nina Turner in the Democratic primary. Again, a heavily Democratic district, and she won 70% of the vote on Tuesday.
Yes, in Central Ohio, the race was a little closer, but not that close. This was the election to fill the seat left vacant by Steve Sivers. Republican Mike Carey easily defeated Republican Mike Carey easily defeated Democrat Allison Russo. Carey, the coal lobbyist and Donald Trump-endorsed candidate, was quick to thank the former president and what he thinks the race means for Democrat.
What we did tonight was give Nancy Pelosi a wake-up call that her days as Speaker are coming to an end.
Russo, who showed some fight, outraised Carey in the last reporting period and suggested that she will be back on the ballot soon.
There is too much at stake in Washington and right here in Ohio for us to sit idly by and on the sidelines. I was built for tough fights, and I am looking forward to the next one in 2022. So thank you all.
This presents a lot of opportunity. We can improve on this. We're building, Mike. But
the fight has just begun.
But you lost, Russo.
But she didn't put a number there. She'll be back in 2022.
Yeah, so. I wouldn't even say she hinted it. I think she said she'll be back in 2022.
Yeah, it's a matter of what she runs for. Now, again, we had no surprise in the results of this district. Donald Trump won this district by 14 points in 2020. Mike Carey won it this year by 16 points over Russo. So, well within what the average margin of victory for Republicans in this district. I think a Democrat has only won this district, only served as congressperson in this district, I think like 6 or 8 out of the last 50 years, 54 years.
54 of the last 60 years it has been represented by a Republican.
So it's a hit.
Deborah Price, going back way before that.
Yeah. Mary Jo Kilroy represented this district for one term. So it's a naturally Republican district, and with the maps that were drawn 10 years ago, it's a very Republican district.
Yeah, Mike Carey didn't make any mistakes, is probably how he won, right? I mean, this district was drawn to be represented by a Republican. Carey campaigned on all the typical Trump issues, parental choice in school, critical race theory, policing, immigration, excessive government spending. It was really the greatest hits, and he didn't have to do much. Allison Russo, again, outspent him near the end. She had some what I thought were clever and funny ads, honestly, featuring her daughter. And she had some ads trying to tie Mike Carey to the House Bill 6 scandal, the nuclear power plant bailout scandal here in Columbus. And it didn't work, or it didn't work enough anyway.
Yeah, I mean, this district, it stretches from sort of the western side of the city of Columbus all the way down to Athens. It snakes its way all the way down to Athens. So it's a very rural, it has very rural parts of this district. And you could see how Alison Russo might have done better running against being the anti-Trump candidate in the suburbs of Columbus, which are part of this district, but not they wouldn't serve her well down in the more rural parts of southern, southeastern Ohio. So we'll have to see. You know, the congressional maps are coming out this week. We'll talk about those in next week's podcast. But the new congressional maps are coming out this week, designed by Republicans. We'll have to see how this district changes. And I think that will determine what Alison Russo runs for in 2022.
Yeah, I think this is maybe slightly anecdotal, but a Trump Republican won the district by more than a literal Chamber of Commerce Republican did in Steve Stivers, who previously represented this district. And as you say, he won by 14 points in 2020. So Mike Carey building a little bit on that success. I don't know what. So he has to run again before long, Mike Carey. Yeah. This is not a long term. This is a special election to briefly fill the seat. And
yeah, they're back on the ballot exactly 1 year from now.
Yeah, and I don't know who's going to run for that seat. Danny O'Connor, the Franklin County recorder, is one option. He unsuccessfully ran against Troy Balderson for another suburban Columbus district, the 12th district. Beyond that, I don't know. No other declared candidates, certainly, at this point.
Yeah, Danny O'Connor says he's running, but he hasn't said which district. It probably depends on which which district they put him in.
Sure.
Because the map will change. You know, it's we'll talk about Virginia and New Jersey in a moment, but it's the year after the cycle after your party wins the White House is always bad for that party. It has been that way for a long, long time.
It's easy to run against the party in power.
Yeah. Because when you're campaigning, everything's, you know, peaches and roses and everything's going to be great. Well, then you get to governing and not always so easy. And you can't get things passed that you want. And the promises don't go fulfilled, at least not in the first 2 years. So it's only natural that voters would rebel a little bit against the party in power. The folks who lose are more energized after losing to come out and vote. I think we saw that this week in maybe not just in Ohio, but certainly in Virginia and New Jersey. So it's going to be tough sledding for the Democrats no matter what, just based on history next year. But if the districts change and they are a little more competitive, they likely will be a little more competitive, but not tremendously more competitive than they are now.
No, it's hard not to be less competitive than they are. I mean, they can't get any less competitive.
The new rules will make them more competitive because they have rules on compactness and splitting up communities. So in theory, they will be more competitive.
Yeah, hey, good for Republicans, good for Mike Carey. He won the seat. But again, being the backup quarterback is the best job in football, right? I mean, you sit on the sidelines and say what the guy in charge is doing wrong. But Mike Carey not going to have that option anymore. As you mentioned, turning now to Virginia and to New Jersey. In Virginia, Republican Glenn Youngkin beat Democrat Terry McAuliffe in the race of the century, right? The biggest campaign ever. And in New Jersey, the Democratic incumbent Philip Murphy and Republican Jack Cittarelli basically tied as we record this podcast, which is a pleasant surprise for Republicans, not so pleasant for Democrats, though. What do you think it means for Ohio?
Not a whole lot. I mean,
come on. It's in New Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that these off-year elections, the political reporting class and the pundits, they make such a big deal out of this one governor's race. Now, it is perhaps the first test of Joe Biden's popularity and his coattails and things like that, but it's one governor's race. They are two candidates. It's no coincidence that this got so much play because
there's nothing else going on nationally.
And 75% of the Washington press corps lives in Virginia. So it was like a home team contest for them to cover. It got way more attention than it deserved. The Republicans wanted to win this one, and they won it. And they deserve a lot of credit for going after it and getting this race because it does give them momentum heading into next year. It probably helps their fundraising. It helps energize their base to say, we can win back Congress. We can win the Senate, break the tie and win the Senate, and then launch whoever runs for president in 2024. But we have such a short attention span.
I can think of one, turning now to New Jersey, I can think of one New Jersey governor who I've ever known in my life. I don't know him personally, but the one I can name by name, Chris Christie. What is his political affiliation?
He was a Republican.
It is not unprecedented for New Jersey to elect a Republican.
Not at all. No, especially a more moderate Republican. Like this candidate here, he did not fully embrace Donald Trump. Even Youngkin didn't fully embrace Donald Trump. He had a telephone rally with him. That's, you know, that's
pretty milquetoast.
That's as arm's length as you can get without giving him the stiff arm. So it's an important election. Gives us a little bit of a hint as to what the mood of the voter is. It gives you a little hint of what Republicans think is the key to winning next year and in 2024. They're going to stick with social issues. They're going to stick with school curriculum as an issue. Policing is going to be an issue. And that Democrats will have to just take their lumps probably in 2022, maybe come back a bit. And then the other election we should mention is in Minneapolis.
I was about to say that when it comes to policing.
The Minneapolis, the voters there rejected what would have been a significant overhaul of the police department. The police department still would have existed, but it would have been rolled into this Department of Public Safety.
More of a public health focus.
Yeah, more of a
focus.
It had more emphasis on prevention of crime and treating mental health and trying to have sort of social workers more than policing for certain incidents. And the voters soundly said, no, we don't want that. So it just goes to show you that what Twitter left says is reality is not always reality, and people still like police officers. I think they want police officers to do their jobs well and not have a George Floyd murder
attached
to them.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
it needs fixing, but they don't want to do away with policing.
No, based on that vote, most people don't.
No, I mean, the crime rate is really high. They like cops. People like cops.
You did mention the situation in schools being a focus of Republicans for 2024. It was a focus for a lot of the country in this election. School board races, usually fairly routine, right? Not too contentious. But this year, parents upset over mask mandates and the possibility of critical race theory being taught jumped into school board races.
Yes, and some of those candidates won, like Beth Murdoch, who was part of a group of candidates running for the Hilliard City School Board on a platform of masks being optional.
And I know it started with, you know, parents not being felt like they were being heard, but I really felt that, you know, the outcome of this election is that there were other people out there who were not feeling heard or represented on the school board.
It looks like the parents' rights candidates' success was spotty, though they fared poorly in Northeast Ohio. Here in Central Ohio, some, like Beth Murdoch, had success. Others lost, though. Nikki Hudson won re-election to the Worthington School Board using a platform that included the support of masks in classrooms.
I'm not so naive as to think that all of a sudden now all of our issues will be solved and we won't have, you know, these pressing issues that on which our community may still be divided in part.
I appreciate her pragmatism there that we have not solved all the nation's issues in one election. It's hard to tell, hard to get a gauge on what exactly happened here, because obviously some candidates make this the forefront of their campaign, like the group in Hilliard did. Two out of three won there. In Northeast Ohio, they, like you said, they did not fare nearly as well. I don't know. What do you take away from this? That there was some success, basically.
Yeah, I think it depends on the community. The community Hilliard is a more conservative community than the community of Worthington. So I think the folks who touted parental rights and parental choice had more of a chance in that community than they did in a more liberal community, more like in Northeast Ohio, for instance. Just putting the masks aside, the whole debate over mask mandates and vaccine mandates, I think this tapped into a frustration that parents didn't feel like they had a voice in how the schools are run. Parents vote for, you know, school taxes. They vote against school taxes. Individually, they will complain to teachers and administrators about how their children are being taught. But this, I think, tapped into a frustration among some in the community that what teachers are doing, what schools are doing, we're not taking into proper consideration what the parents wanted. Now, the concern is that is this what most parents want, or is this just a very vocal minority that don't want them teaching, you know, they want them teaching, you know, outlandish theories in class or things like that. I think that school boards now certainly are going to be, I think, more attuned to what parents are saying.
And some of this is just fear-mongering, honestly, like the critical race theory debate here in Ohio. Critical race theory not taught in any Ohio schools. It's largely considered a graduate school concept by which we can use racism to understand American history. I don't know. We saw shirts like "I don't co-parent with the government" pop up at rallies. All the, I mean, I think you're right that this did sort of tap into this frustration of parents who don't have control once they send their kids to school, and I think that scares them. And I you know, as a parent of two young boys who are attending a school district where masks are not seen favorably at all in rural Union County, I understand. I'm coming at from the opposite point of view where, you know, there's a lot of frustration in my district from parents who are the minority who want masks in schools, but they feel like the board's not listening to them. So I understand how frustrating it can be to live in a district where you don't think board members really care what you think.
And to give these candidates credit, a lot of these candidates were first-time candidates. Even if they didn't win, mm-hmm. they had strong showings. And they put their name out there and they said, you know what, I don't like what's happening in my school, so I'm going to run for school board.
It is the American way, right?
That's what you do. Yeah. That's really what you should do. And congratulations to them, whatever their point of view, whether you ran to support the masks mandates or you ran opposed to the mask mandates.
They were fairly elected by their peers.
They put themselves out there. They ran a campaign, and that, you know, good for them. The problem is you hope, because the masks hopefully will go away soon. So what role should a group of parents have in deciding what is taught in the schools and who should make that decision? Is it the professional educators or is it parents? And it's been a debate in this country for a long, long time. It doesn't look like it's going to go away anytime soon. In fact, it's intensified.
Certainly not. Let's turn now to our Snollygoster of the Week award, honoring the shrewdest political move of the week. This one a little stale, kind of like that Halloween candy that's on sale at the grocery store this week.
Half off. Last week, Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost sent out an alert warning parents and kids of danger on Halloween or Beggar's Night, as the case might be. He warned Ohioans about illegal and dangerous cannabis edibles and hemp derivatives that are packaged to look like well-known brands of snack foods and candy.
Aren't those things expensive? Yes, I don't know anybody giving out that. He said, quote, parents need to be extra cautious, especially around Halloween, that these copycat products don't wind up in treat bags. So that does imply this has happened, right? Isn't that what Dave Yost is implying, that this is a problem?
Well, maybe the warnings worked, because lo and behold, there were no reported incidents of edibles in trick-or-treat bags. In fact, there have never been reported incidents of edibles in trick-or-treat bags anytime or anywhere.
Kind of like those old check your candy for needles and razor blades kind of thing, right?
Oh,
never happened.
When I worked in local commercial TV news, one of my assignments was to go to the ER where they were x-raying kids' candy.
What'd they find? Chocolate? They found a lot of chocolate.
They found nothing. A lot of calories and
a lot of bubble
cavities.
Gum. Whatever the motivation to grab a headline, to win favor with anti-marijuana conservatives, whatever he was doing, Dave Yost, our Snollygoster of the Week. And you know what? Now this got me remembering. This should not be any surprise to people who subscribe to Dave Yost's newsletters, as we do here in the press, right?
Yes.
This guy's newsletters are full of cheesy, bad punchlines from 80 cop movies. It's really funny and entertaining. So, some of the ones that I've seen over the years, a man charged with illegal dumping, quote, this garbage man drove off with your trash but was never headed to a landfill. And hauling trash to anywhere but the landfill, Mike, is a rotten business. Also, home improvement contractor sued by the state, quote, we've grabbed her tools and we're going to drop the hammer on these guys.
You know, Dave Yost is a former journalist.
He is.
He used to write for a living. And his communications director is also a former journalist.
Are they looking for help?
Well, they get their attention.
It does get their right. So it's so bad, it's good.
Right, exactly. It's so bad, it's good. That's a great way to put it.
Anyway, Dave Yost for the cheesy 80s cop movie lines in your press releases, and for the scare tactics when it comes to marijuana Halloween candy, you are our Snollygoster of the Week. If you have a suggestion for next week, you can send it to snollygoster@wosu.org. For our web producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.